Our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Tickets for the Run Happy Travers are on sale now for just $15. Don't miss Saratoga's biggest day of the season. The Run Happy Travers, Saturday, August 28th. Save $5 when you buy your tickets in advance at NYRA.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back and hearing John Embriel and the opportunity to get tickets for Travers on Saturday, and should be good. We got the YouTube channel here, and we'll look in as we talk to Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. It seems like this week went by so quick because I was really surprised when Casey called. I forgot it was Wednesday, and it just seemed like you and I spoke.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, it's all been a blur. Going out to California, you know, taking the evening flight on Wednesday after we talked, and a quick it was 5 days in San Diego and Del Mar.
Nice.
Know, 4 days at the track then shifting tack here to Vegas. It's a bit of a blur, and then we'll have a flurry of action through closing weekend at Saratoga once we get home. So
did Derby Barbie go to Vegas with you too?
Oh, listen, she's shifted tack too. She's now Vegas Barbie, and she's right in the swing of it. In fact, it's 7:30. It's a little early for her to drop anchor at the pool, but yesterday I was looking around after I got off the air, and I found her. She was poolside, and she actually didn't take much to convince me either to Well, it's so novel for us because we've only ever been here in the winter, and the pools are closed. And frankly, where else would you want to be? It's 105 degrees, but you know, Sid, it's a dry heat.
Yeah, exactly. That's good stuff. Steve, are you there?
The latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live poll report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%.
Sid, it looks like we lost Steve. I'm going to try to get him back. In the meantime, I'm going to send it to commercial.
PennyPride.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
I guess you lost me here for a second, huh, Sid?
Yeah, Steve, can you hear me?
Yeah, it was me. They're working in the ballroom on setting up, you know, all the mechanics, and I think they may have jostled a wire.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I looked down and I saw the lights weren't flicking. But it came right back. So all right, I don't know where you lost me, but I was talking about that. I was talking about the Queen's Plate winner and. A Bodemeister that has got Canadian family. A Regal Classic mare is the second dam.
Yeah, not only is it got Regal Classic as the sire of the second dam, Steve, but this is a great Canadian family because what you have under the second dam, under the second dam itself, that Regal Classic mare you're talking about is the Dam of Fatal Bullet.
Yep.
Horse of the Year in Canada, right?
Yep.
Under the third dam, indented a couple of times, you got Pink Lloyd. Another Horse of the Year in Canada, right? So this is really a terrific Canadian family. And by the way, the eighth dam is Roughshod. Seventh dam is Gambetta. It's a great family. You know, Roughshod, obviously, one of the great matriarchs in the stud book. Of course, you know, that her family, immediate family, is that of Nureyev and Sadler as well, most notably. But, lots of excellent stallions and high-quality winners. It's one of the great stud families in the book. So you've got that on the female side, on the bottom side. Of course, Bodemeister, son of Empire Maker, did himself sire a Kentucky Derby winner and Always Dreaming. You've got a family that's really built for this Queen's Plate. And, Frances Karen pointed out something really amusing to me. She pointed out that this colt has a year older brother, and his name, as she put it, is his name is Queens Plate Nolan.
Yeah, that was put, yeah, that was yeah, that was.
Has, go ahead.
That was Ramsey. That was a Ramsey.
That's yeah. Ramsey's, right? And,
yeah.
And she said her quote to me was, "Quote: Someone had the right idea, but they got the wrong pole out of
it." That's true, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a name also, Sid. You know how I love this. There's a name in this pedigree that is not necessarily, you know, it's a mid to late century stallion that doesn't get a tremendous amount of notice, and I don't know. I don't know the details, but the name Nantala jumped out at me, and the sire of Moccasin, among others.
Yeah, Nantala was, you know, a stallion that stood at Claiborne, and you know what's interesting about Nantala, like a lot of, we've mentioned through the years that Claiborne has taken chances with horses that weren't stakes winners. Well, Nantala was not a stakes winner. He was stakes place. You know, Claiborne has Flatter, for example, the full brother to Congrats, Nightmare Sire. He's not a stakes winner. Danzig wasn't a stakes winner. Dunce was, Groan wasn't a stakes winner. You know, they've taken shots with horses like that, and Nantala happens to be one of them. And Nantala is the son of Nazrula. Stallion, really. Very influential, actually. And, I believe he's the sire of Lieutenant Stevens.
Lieutenant Stevens, and I think Rydan is a Nantala.
Rydan, yeah, I think so. Let me just check Rydan. Rydan was by...
out of Roughshod, right? This is what made Roughshod so special. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That was a click, and you know it's funny because Roughshod is by a sire whose name a French sire that I don't know at all, Goldbridge.
Yeah, Goldbridge is we're getting back there. I mean, he was. He was
McCumber.
The McCumber
families.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was a horse that was obviously a race in Europe. He was a sprinter and won the King's Stand twice. And his main contribution really is leaving the dam of being the sire of Roughshod, who was so influential. But it's really interesting because Lieutenant Stevens, like you pointed out, is by Nantala from Roughshod. And so when you look at his family and you see Nantala back there under safe conduct, you know, the nosy Nan, the 1, 2, 3, 4 dam is by Nantala from the family of Roughshod, so very closely related to Lieutenant Stevens.
Amazing. Fun to touch on these types. I don't recall Rydan himself having much of a... Was he much of a stallion?
I don't think so. He's not...
No.
He hasn't really... he wasn't, and he hasn't had any influence in the league. You know, it's funny because, you know, we're doing this at work, at Worth Urban Consultants. You know, we're going through this Keeneland September sale, and I was talking to an analyst about, you know, we pick horses as best of sale, you know, we shortlist horses, and a lot of times, you'll get to a stallion, and I use Rydan because you mentioned it, a really good racehorse. And when sometimes when somebody sees a horse like that in the pedigree, they impute too much value to that name. So in the case of Rydan, in the pedigree, they may say, oh, you know, well, wow, he won this race, you know, race, terrific horse, race against Jaipur, won XXX. But when you're looking at the pedigree of a horse, you have to discount a stallion like Rydan, who hasn't had either a big influence as a sire of sires or relevance nowadays as a sire of broodmares. So sometimes you have to just ignore a horse in a pedigree just because they haven't had an influence. And, you know, that's just a little aside that I was reminded about in a conversation I had yesterday. You know, if a horse sort of like a Rydan type, you know, I said, yeah. We were discussing the pedigree, and I said, well, you know, that horse really hasn't had any influence, so why are we giving it so much, you know, credence?
Yeah, you know, in addition, since we landed on this mating with Roughshod and Nantala, not that she's a horse that time forgot, my moniker, but if yeah. Moccasin was running today, they wouldn't be able to come up with superlatives. I mean, for her,
yeah, exactly.
She I don't think she's a Hall of Famer, but she
was a horse. Of
she
the
was
year,
during,
so I think she must have been.
Yeah, she
you
was
know,
a horse.
2-year-old horse of the year.
Exactly, the champion 2-year-old filly and co-horse of the year.
Yeah, co-horse
in 1965.
Yeah, of course, that was all before the Eclipse Awards, you know, made it all one award. So sometimes you had cohort, you know, sometimes people think back as Secretariat as like the first 2-year-old horse of the year, but actually Moccasin, before him, was a cohort of the year, as you point out, as a 2-year-old.
Well, and... you know, from her own pedigree, she did get a very nice stake winner in Flippers as a broodmare, and Flippers, you know, got a handful. I'd have to do some research on that front to see if.
Oh yeah, it's a very very long influential
right, long
pedigree. I mean,
yeah.
Stormy Atlantic at Hillendale is from that family, isn't he? Let me just check.
Okay.
Stormy
That's
Atlantic.
Cool.
Let's see. Stormy Atlantic is Moccasin is his second dam.
There you go. Well done. Well done. Well done. Sid, I'm watching here. The video has started, so we'll listen in to the Travers draw, and I'd love for you to riff
absolutely.
A little bit. Well, and I want you to, you know, look at this field. I mean, obviously we've talked about essential quality 100 times, but it seems. But you know, if there's some notes and some thoughts on you know the horses involved in this group, you know, feel free to unfold. And of course, you know, with all the, obviously it's the glamour division when it comes to the, you know, the classic distance, the Midsummer Derby, but I think people are starting to get excited about the matchup in the Alan Jerkins as well, with Life Is Good returning.
Yeah, Life Is Good is, you know, obviously a horse we did the mating for. We've been anticipating his return really eagerly, and you know, he's in the interim that he went to the sideline, Into Mischief has continued to roll, hasn't he? I mean, what a stallion Into Mischief is becoming, is, and will probably continue to write some, you know, big records.
The, I don't want to turn away from this too much, but, While we wait, I guess we could also touch on something, Sid, from the weekend. And speaking of classic distance, we've discussed Malathat, but I thought it was pretty notable and remarkable. I commented on it Monday with Stone Street's success, and it. I'm sure it's been done, But you can't stress enough what Barbara Banky has gone on with from Jess Jackson, where you had a scenario with his passing, and people wondered, you know, how, you know, what's the future? Well, the future is burgeoned. It's remarkable what she's accomplished.
It really is. Stone Street is just a remarkable outfit, a remarkable commercial breeding outfit. They've collected stallions too, from Curlin, obviously at the top, the horses like Cantharos. You know, they have pieces of horse in McLean's Music, and of course they've really assembled an incredible broodmare band, and they just seem to be able to produce over and over again at a quantity that we probably haven't seen a breeding operation to spit out the quality and quantity of top class horses like Stone Street in recent memory, you know. And don't forget, Charlatan is a Stone Street horse.
Yeah.
Also going, obviously, to Hillendale. But you're absolutely right. I'm always amazed. They have an uncanny ability to do this, and they have, not just one type, dirt, speed, stain, turf, dabbled with European bloodlines, Lady Aurelia taken to Europe to race. It's just a fabulous mixture. Australia, they've raced in Australia. So those horses that, and this operation that started with Jess Jackson, it's not a stretch to say Barbara Banky is taking it to another level altogether, a much bigger level than with Jess Jackson. I mean, Jess Jackson notably bought Rachel Alexandra, Curlin, but Barbara Banky has set about a breeding program that's absolutely remarkable.
Well, and to run 1-2, I mean, with horses that you bred, one obviously that was sold, but to run 1-2, in the Alabama, it's pretty amazing with Clarier. And Clarier, I tell you, Clarier was coming and ran very well.
Yeah, she was
closing
really good. Yeah.
Yes, she was. Yes,
she
was.
When you have when outfits can tap into and have a controlling part of a big stallion, in this case, Curlin, it really propels a outfit. You know, Windstar has had this type of success as well, but they're much bigger. Whenever an outfit, you go back to, we're talking here about the Roughshot family in Claiborne and whatnot, and of course the Phippses at Claiborne with Bold Ruler. You know, they rode such a huge wave with that. We see in Europe what Coolmore has been doing with Galileo, right? Whenever you hit a gusher like that, a stallion that's extraordinary, and you really use that stallion, your whole operation gets taken to another level.
Well, my only complaint out of that performance Saturday was the clamoring for Malathat to run in the and target the classic. I mean, I don't get it. And although Rick Nichols added to the fuel to the fire when he said that if Sheikh Hamdan was alive, he might want to do that. So
he did add to it. And prior to this, before she got beaten last time, they were talking about the Travers too. They were actually talking about meeting the guys. She doesn't have that type of brilliance like, say, a Rachel Alexander did at three, you know.
Yeah, I don't understand the mania for this, and I also just cringe when I hear people say, "Oh, they do it in Europe all the time." Don't compare turf racing to dirt racing in that vein, because it's not apples to apples at all, not even close.
Right.
The physical demand on a horse to run a mile and a quarter on the dirt in this case versus the turf, where they jog around for 80% of the race and they finish the last quarter mile with a flourish. That's not the same as running, you know, open mouth on dirt. It's just, it's amazing that there's just this sort of assumption that horses running anywhere, any distance, instantly equatable.
Yeah, no, that's very true. You know, it just so happens that, you got people wanting that type of thing here. Ultimately, obviously, it's an owner's decision, but the comparison to Europe and turf racing is absolutely apropos, you know. It does happen in Europe more, and it can happen there where you can find some exceptional fillies that, well, you know, obviously you go to the arc where they get a huge weight break at three-year-olds. But also, it's that mile and a half, like you talked about, you know, the European distance thing is not the same as going balls to walls here.
Yep.
A mile and a quarter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They are underway, about 10 minutes late getting started, but let's listen in and see where they are on this draw, Sid. Here we go. Here's Acacia. Seven horse field.
A mile and a quarter on the main track in the Grade One Run Happy Travers. Let's get right to it.
Here we go.
The four is Dynamic One, Fletcher, Irad.
Number four, Dynamic One.
The five is Miles D, Chad Brown, Pratt.
In post position five, Miles D.
The three is Keep Me in Mind, Deodoro Rosario.
Number three, Keep Me in Mind, looking to turn the tables on Essential Quality this weekend.
The two, Essential Quality, Brad Cox, Saez.
Your two-year-old champion, Essential Quality, in post position two.
The one is Midnight Bourbon, Asmussen, Santana.
Midnight Bourbon in post position one for North America's all-time winningest trainer, Steve Asmussen.
The seven is King Fury, McPeak, Jose Ortiz.
Going turf to dirt, number seven is King Fury.
And the six is Masquerade Parade, Al Stahl, Miguel Mena.
And in post position six, Masquerade. And that is the field for the Run Happy Travers. I now have the morning line odds, courtesy of David Aragona. Number one, Midnight Bourbon, 9-2 on the morning line. Number two, Essential.
Don't need to hang in there for that because we've got the morning line in front of us as well. And Essential Quality, your 4-5 favorite. Aggressive number from David Aragona. And Keep Me in Mind, Joelle and Deodoro, Joelle absolutely elevated Keep Me in Mind. in the Dandy, 6-1, Dynamic One, IRAD for Todd Pletcher and Vinny Viola, Dynamic One, 6-1, 12-1 on Miles D, Flavian Pratt for Chad and Peter Brandt, Mask Parade for the group out of New Orleans, Miguel Mena. Is going to ride, and one of my favorites, a big Mena fan, and I just lost my little screen here. Let me clear that out. Okay, here we go. Back, get this back up. Mass Parade 8-1, and then King Fury, Jose Ortiz getting aboard for Kenny McPeak, 15-1. So a very nice representative field. What's nice about this group, Sid, is you've got a number of the season long 3-year olds involved here, and then the spice of a horse like King Fury, who had been intended and then had to be withdrawn from the Derby. Mask Parade, a emergent type, a midseason emergent type, and Miles D, a price for Chad, but a horse, you know, that was getting good at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, to tell you, it's just a horse that I'm looking at, I think probably really fits this race on pedigree, fits this race in the way he's come back. Trained by Todd Pletcher with IRAD on board is Dynamic One, son of Union Rags, out of Beat the Drums by Smart Shark, really bred for the trip with, you know, the second dam is Storm Flag Flying. Third dam, My Flag, all fifths. And the fourth dam, of course, is the Great Personal Ensign. And, you know, this horse, the way he came back, won the Curlin, and now going up to 1.25 miles, I mean, it just seems like, you know, this is a Phipps bred, rare thing when they decided to sell the Colts 2 years ago. It was in that group. I think he made, like, 725. But Phipps's men came in for a piece, and Ripoli and St. Elias own it together. But really, just that type of horse that needs that kind of maturity. And, you know, on pedigree, really very, very suited for this race.
Interesting. I have had, you know, the sense pretty much throughout the Triple Crown and now into the summer. Midnight Bourbon feels like the horse whose time is got to come at some point, and I'm anxious actually to see these PPs tonight and start to get a feel for the dynamics of the race.
And of course, Midnight Bourbon was second in the Preakness, obviously in that great race with and he was second in the Louisiana Derby. And by the way, just to tie back to what we were talking about earlier, also a Stone Street bred horse, owned by Winchell but bred by Stone Street.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And this horse has a lot of speed on the bottom side, too, because his second dam is by Yes It's True, but his fourth dam is Monique Renee, who's the second dam of Yes It's True. So what you have there is you have the inbreeding to the family of Yes It's True. So it's a really interesting pedigree. There's a lot of speed on it. I've always felt like this horse, you know, he gets that ability to stay from the sire, but there's a heck of a lot of speed on that female bottom side. And it's one of the reasons why I've always, you know, he's run like he can win, obviously, but he just seems to be a little short for the trip, pedigree-wise. Although, visually, in his races, he's obviously 1.316. He's been right there, both in the Louisiana Derby and the Preakness.
I wanted to pull up, go to the stakes noms for now, and because I wanted to see the Chad. There were some comments from Chad that I thought were very interesting regarding Miles D, and because he certainly was another horse that. You talk about Clairier, Miles D was finishing in that Curlin. He's another Curlin as well.
Yeah, and he's also another from the family of Personal Incident. In fact, his second dam is Personal Incident. His third dam is Personal Incident. His second dam is My Flag. So what you have is the same female family as Dynamic One.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I mean, obviously, this horse is bred for a mile and a half.
The Bernardini mare. And see, this is a very... I'm going to have to dig into the record books a little bit. Just curious... Who might have won the Travers in only a fourth career start?
Did Stage Door Johnny win the Travers?
Oof.
Or was that the Belmont?
He won the. I think he. Jesus, that's a great question. I think he might have won. Was that 68?
Yeah, 68. Wow, you got a great memory.
Well, Equibase only lists three wins for him, which is very funny. They singled out the Belmont, the Saranac, and the Dwyer for Stage Door Johnny. It's kind of funny.
More recently, though, you've had Arrogate when he won. What was that race? It was his fifth.
All right. This would certainly be a very minimal record for a horse to potentially win this race in a fourth career start. And he's come along. You know, he did debut as a 2-year-old, and then Chad didn't get him back until June. So third off the long layoff. I'll be anxious to see what Mike Welch and company he's been working on the main track. So Mike will have the workout report on Miles D. An interesting player.
Both horses, Dynamic One and Miles D from the Curlin, those are the two horses that finished from far back. And I think Dynamic One had a couple of lengths on Miles D, and then it was like 10 lengths back to the third, as I recall.
This is a nice race. I one of those examples of a race that doesn't need a dozen horses. This is a very nice group of seven, and of course, you know, King Fury had such a tortured spring where it really felt like an emergent horse right at the right time for Derby, and had the rug yanked out from under him. And it's been a very difficult. McPeak has gotten kind of shut out of a number of places between that situation with King Fury and then the restrictions placed on the barn at Saratoga. I mean, they've certainly been blocked at a number of occasions. But you know, that Lexington win, and he ran a good second to Mass Parade in the Ohio Derby, the traditional Travers Prep, and and then there's Mass Parade too. The upstart out of the Any Given Saturday mare, Brary Jones bred, and. Looking to snap back out of that Jim Dandy. This is fun. This is a really fun race. And listen, it may all be moot, Sid. I mean, if Essential Quality runs his A race, he's tough to beat.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he gets the job done and just grinds it out. You know, King Fury, by the way, another curling, too.
Yep.
You know, whenever you have these curlings, you know, you're never afraid of a mile and a quarter.
This should be fun. This is a fun, you know, it's also nice to look at a field like this, and you've got everybody coming out of essentially what three races: the Jim Dandy, the Curlin, and the Ohio Derby.
Yeah.
The Haskell situation, of course, that was a fiasco for Midnight Bourbon. Not going to deal with that, but you got the top finishers out of the Jim Dandy. You got the 1-2 out of the Ohio Derby as well, with Mass Parade and King Fury.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's the speed in this race?
Well, that was my interest, and I suppose I'll tell you what. I drawing the one hole forces Santana's hand on Midnight Bourbon, and you know, here's an oddity that I would say for the Asmussen barn and the Winchell team. This is Ricardo Santana's first start on Midnight Bourbon.
Yeah, that is an oddity.
Corey Lannery, Gerardo Corrales, Jose Ortiz, Joe Talamo, Mike Smith, Errat Ortiz, and Paco Lopez. Very, very strange.
That
Santana.
Lopez, go ahead.
It hadn't occurred to me that Santana hadn't had a chance aboard Midnight Bourbon.
Wow, that is quite an anomaly. I was going to say, you know, I mean, Santana is so good on the lead.
And Mass Parade, you know, is a tendency to break sharp, and Miguel Mena, you know, certainly is a hustling type rider. Essential Quality, you'll get out and gain, you know, early position. That's Saez's way. So mm-hmm. I feels like an honest enough, you know, with three horses essentially in the Tom Durkin vanguard, it feels like you'll get an honest pace.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that you know, Santana would want to conserve as much with that big horse. Midnight Bourbon. He looks like a massive horse.
Yeah, I'm just Essential Quality and Midnight Bourbon, said there's an interesting, it depends on what Saez does and how. I think Santana is going to have to be aggressive from down there, and it Saez, I think he'll probably look to his outside and see if Mask Parade, if Mena is going to go. He might even use Essential Quality a little bit, you know, to sort of force Mena's hand, and then watch Essential Quality kind of take back, assuming that Midnight Bourbon and Mass Parade are at least engaging each other to some degree. And that sets Essential Quality up for yet another of the dream kind of voyages that he's had.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Well, and thanks to our friend Leslie Knopf, said it was Champion that beat State Georgiani in the Travers in 68. Champion.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Good work.
Very good. Thanks, Leslie.
Well,
but he didn't have State Georgiani didn't have many starts, I don't think, going into the Travers. I mean, he'd won the Belmont. But anyway, Arrogate, fifth start, first stakes. That was the stakes debut in the Travers, too.
And what about West Coast?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, West Coast, West Coast probably didn't have many starts going into the Travers either.
I'll tell you right away. I got it right here, in fact. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, he did have a. He had six starts.
Okay, he had six. Had five.
But you know, he. I tell you what, he filled. He shoved those six starts. He caught up pretty quickly because he didn't debut until February 18th. Broke his maiden in March. Second in the Lexington in April. An allowance winner. He really, Baffert kind of really took his time going up the ladder with him. Then an allowance win, then the easy goer win in June, the Los Alamitos Derby in July, and then the Travers in August, and the Pennsylvania Derby in September. And yeah, he had a, I'll tell you what, I hadn't looked at this season in a while. It's 4 years ago. He really had a nice season. That was really a nice campaign.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a terrific, terrific campaign. You know, it was that period where the West had three Eclipse Award-winning colts in 4 years. Game winner, West Coast, and Maximum Security, which is a phenomenal record.
It really is.
Yeah.
And when, in fact, game winner, went to game winners got...
Game winner and West Coast are both at stud at Lane's End.
Lane's End, but I mean, when did he enter? When are his babies coming?
Well, this is his first year.
This was his first year. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So we won't see the babies for 2 years.
Yeah, but we're seeing the West Coast yearlings right
yes.
now. Yeah.
Well, Sid, this was fun. I don't think we've ever had a live draw kind of a visit like this. So this was cool.
Yeah, and, real good. Great.
So
we'll
dynamic one.
Talk again next week.
You bet.
Yeah,
dynamic one for you though. All right.
I like Miles B, but you know, dynamic one kind of outfinished him in the curling, and I think that sets him up good for this.
Dynamic one, the four for Sid, and you get a little bit of a price too. So there it is, and obviously you're rooting for Life is Good in the Jerkins.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Well, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale and Sid Fernando with the team at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, and we keep edging closer. Get a hold of Sid, and even in advance of the sale at Keeneland, get some advice and pedigree thoughts. Sid and Roger, happy to help you manage your operation. Sid, thanks so much. Enjoy it.
Thank
and,
you,
talk to you back from New York next week.
Okay. See you. Bye.
Sid Fernando. Let's take a break. Our last of the morning, second and last. And when we come back, Kerry Breon is going to join us. We got to catch up with Kerry before we talk to Seth Merrow and look at the changes for today's action. And we'll get some opinions and we'll get a quick read from Seth as well. He was at the draw. So we'll talk to him in a little bit. Back after this, though, Kerry Breon off of Thursday last week's trifecta in the Jonathan Shepherd. Looking forward to congratulating her. A pretty special accomplishment. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product.
because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Thoroughbred horse racing returns to the home state of Secretariat when Colonial Downs in Virginia conducts its summer season with a new afternoon racing schedule and minimum daily purses of $500,000. The season runs from July 19th to September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Tickets for the Run Happy Travers are on sale now for just $15. Don't miss Saratoga's biggest day of the season. The Run Happy Travers, Saturday, August 28th. Save $5 when you buy your tickets in advance at NYRA.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back in about 20 minutes into hour three. It's been an absolute rocket sled of a morning, and we'll finish with a flourish as well, because we're going to start with Kerry Breon and the first opportunity to have Kerry visit and congratulate her on just the emotional and special accomplishment, a 1-2-3 finish in the Jonathan Shepherd, the first Jonathan Shepherd, but of course the long-running New York Turf Riders Cup handicap. And Kerry, it's just been a pretty magical, at this point, let's call it a magical year. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, it's been a while. Sure.
And, you know, we were so focused on what it meant, you know, basically, you know, going on with Jonathan's operation to win the namesake first running. But there's also the matter of the Mean Queen coming back after her mishap.
Yeah.
Let's call it in the Kaiser, right?
Yeah, for sure. She redeemed herself, didn't she? And it was great for Tom to just come back out and kind of shut everybody else up, because she's not simple, and, you know, it was a shame that it happened. And, yeah, it was fitting, I'd say.
You know, she's obviously going to be, and we'll folk, let's get into the conversation about the race, and then we can kind of talk about its parameters and you know, what it means. But she's 5 years old.
It's incredible. She hadn't won a hurdle race until April of this past year. Was her first hurdle win and run. So put that into perspective.
Exactly. I mean, she's had seven career starts total, and it's funny. We don't. It's not often that we get a mare.
No.
Not that we don't get them, you know, running in the chasing per se, but we don't really think about, you know, saying, well, you know, is she eligible to you know, head to the breeding shed.
Yeah.
Right? It's a different, it's really a different equation.
Yeah. No, it's wild. And I mean, she was always fought with the, you know, idea that she would be bred, she would be part of Mr. Moorhead's breeding operation down the line, but you know, they have no plans to breed her anytime in the near future. We're going to enjoy her as long as we can, and she's really good for the sport, I think. And, you know, everyone's kind of taken a following to her, especially since her little mishap in the novice. And, you know, I think she's really good for the sport, and, you know, we'll keep going with her as long as we can.
I don't want to jump straight forward to the Lonesome Glory, but let's be honest. This is going to be with Snapdragon. This is going to be the most anticipated Lonesome Glory in a long time.
In a very long time. Yep. I know, it's exciting. It's exciting to, you know, knock on wood, she stays good. She seems really good since her run. So, we're looking forward to taking him on more for the sport than anything else. It's going to be really, you know, it's going to be really exciting to see these two horses up against one another for sure.
We touched on the Mean Queen and her personality. I don't want to call them issues, but what do you do with her between races in terms of maintenance?
Yeah, you know, she's come back pretty settled and happy for the time being, which is normally how she is. The more wound she starts getting, and, you know, she kind of knows she's getting closer to running. We'll probably work these once or twice before they go back to the Lonesome Glory, but, you know, for the next week or two, she'll just be doing easy gallops, really, and then we'll turn it up a little bit the last week or 10 days, but you don't really need to do too much. It's just keep her happy, and you know, we kind of do what she tells us.
Well, in addition, of course, to the Mean Queen's win, here was Baltimore Bucko, who figured to do what he did, and off the Smithwick win, right? I mean, he was going to go to the lead. I mean, that's a great question, Kerry. What was your essential instructions? I suppose, you know, let everybody ride their own race, but what did you tell the four jocks?
Everyone knew Bucko was going, and I said that in the paddock. Obviously, Richie knew that what he was going to do on him, and Tom knows the Queen very well, and basically it was just, you know, no one was ever going to let Bucko get out of their sights, but to be fair to that horse, he really stepped up and ran a really gallant race in defeat. I mean, to carry the top weight and hang in there to stay second only to be beat by a mare that is God only knows how good, I thought it was a huge effort. You know, French Light was always going to sit back and come with a run. He ended up getting in a little bit more traffic than I think the horse likes in a race. He was just kind of in amongst the horses, and he had a bit of, not that he had a bad trip, but a bit of a rough trip. He had a couple cuts and scrapes and whatnot on him, so I don't think he was necessarily comfortable the whole way around. But once he got out, he came with his good run, you know. I mean, and you see how much closer he was to Bucko this time around.
Yeah.
I think the Queen is just superior, really.
Well, she was getting, let's also frame that. Let's see. She got, what, 9 pounds from Bucko? And 5 from French Light.
Yeah, so she's still getting weight off as well, you know, being a mare and everything else. So there's that also. I mean, do I think it really matters? No, I don't. I think she can carry the same amount of weight, and the result was still going to be the same. She's just toying with them. It'll be interesting to see what she does when she's up against a horse like Snap Decision.
I called him Snapdragon. and actually, my wife is here. Tina's here, and she knows that whenever we go looking for stuff for planting for the, you know, for the yard, I always say to her, I always point out the Snapdragons, and she says no Snapdragons. So that I'll lock it into my. She hates them. She says no one likes Snapdragons. That's pretty funny. Well, and to go a little further, I'm not wanting to over speculate, but some thoughts about getting to Far Hills and her, you know, her approach to a course like that.
Yeah, and I mean, that should only suit her. This racetrack game really shouldn't be her specialty. Really, a track like Far Hills should suit her way more, coming from Ireland and, you know, running in a point-to-point and having that background. You know, the staying courses should suit her way more than the racetrack does. She's just doing this off of pure ability. A track like Far Hills should definitely be way more suitable to her. So, I mean, you'd like to think that the best is yet to come with her, but we take one day at a time because it can all come crashing down in a day.
Well, at the very least, this summer and running here, and of course next with down to Belmont for the Lonesome Glory, at the least it's putting speed in, right? I mean, it's a different kind of a dynamic, and might even enhance her repertoire.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it kind of. I've had a lot of people ask me if I would run her on the flat. She does not have a gate card, and it's not been something that we've thought too hard about as she's making plenty of money and doing, you know, plenty good enough over the jumps. But the way that she seems to come home in these jump races, the way she's finishing and how fast the turn of foot that she seems to have, it does make you think of it. I mean, she kind of could do anything, I'd say.
Well, shift gears to the emotional aspect of this. And, you know, you were concentrating on winning the race first and foremost, but then at some point it has to kind of sink in the importance and the opportunity to for regarding Jonathan. I mean, there's
sure.
There was a lot to this.
There was a lot to it, and, you know, I mean, considering 6 months ago I was sitting in Ireland and not even knowing if I was going to have these horses to train, and, you know, it all kind of came full circle, and I guess it worked out the way it was supposed to work out. But, I mean, it's been a long 6 months, and it hasn't all been perfect, you know. So it means a lot to do it, especially these owners. You know, Mrs. Moorhead is related to Penny Shepherd Johnson's second wife, who, you know, is the mother of his two kids, Diana and Dan. And, you know, it's all kind of very intertwined and personal on a lot of different levels. So I was really happy to be able to do that for Mr. and Mrs. Moorhead. They've been really huge supporters of me and have never, ever waived their feelings or belief in me. And he's bought a bunch of really nice horses off of my recommendation. And, you know, I thought they would be good horses, but did I dream to have two grade one winners in my first year of training for Mr. Moorhead? Definitely not. You know, these horses just broke their maiden. The Mean Queen broke her maiden in April, and Bucko broke his maiden 11 months before his grade one win. I mean, it's really incredible. You know, they're great horses, but they're even better people. So I'm happy to have been able to do it for them. It's just kind of all comes full circle. And I know, you know, Jonathan would have loved to do it for them as well. I mean, they're great supporters of the game and just really good people.
The magic of the summer has extended down to Colonial as well. And Howie Tuppence for the international venture, as it's termed. Champs-Élysées, gelding, and looks emergent as well.
Yeah, you know, he was a fun little horse that I bought when I was in Ireland for not very expensive money, you know, and he was bought just to be fun. And I got, there's 30 people in that syndicate, and they're from all over the world, Ireland, England, Canada, France, and America. And they're a great group of people. We haven't been able to all get together because of COVID yet, but they've been patient, and the horse is, you know, he's been knocking on the door this whole time. So it was really nice. It was an exciting race, and he got up on the line. Richie, who rode Baltimore Bucko to the second place finish, that was his first American winner. So it was, it was a good day. And we've been knocking on the door in Colonial and hadn't quite gotten it done. So it was nice to riding the wave, per se, I guess, after Saratoga.
Hey, what do you do now, looking ahead, once you break a maiden with a horse like that?
Yeah, so you break their maidens, and then, you know, they get an automatic rating of 116, and they become, obviously, an ever 1-2. So, you know, if it was in the springtime, you'd obviously be putting them away and waiting for Saratoga. There's only one more Saratoga race left, and it comes up quite quick. So, you know, we'll look at, with a horse like that, when they break their maiden, you look for an ever 1-2, you know, wherever that may be next. So he has a lot of conditions left to him, and, you know, that's normally how it goes when you have one that's good enough to break their maiden special weight over jumps.
Yeah, I haven't looked, you know, other than Far Hills and...
Yeah.
And the two races, the Entenmann and the Lonesome
yeah.
Glory, I haven't looked at the rest of the schedule. We go to,
yeah.
There's also what?
We start at Shawan down September 25th. And
okay.
From there, we go all up the East Coast from September 25th every weekend until, I think, November 14th is the final race of the fall in Charleston, South Carolina. So, yeah, there's plenty of opportunity left in the fall as well.
Well, to stay on the jump side of things, and you actually got a very interesting possibility. The next this coming week, and actually before I even ask about swim, tell me about Pormier Rose at Presque Isle today.
Oh my, putting the pressure on me. Yeah.
First time starter, Wigelia.
You're looking me up. Yeah, I like her a lot, but we'll see. As of right now, it looks like I can only train jump winners, so hopefully we change that tonight.
How many?
Yeah, I like her. She's a fun filly we bought at the Timonium sale for, I think it was $20,000 the owner bought her for, and PA bred, so we're trying to capitalize on that. I mean, she is a filly running against the boys. There's a couple other fillies in the race, and it's just for strict PA bred. So, yeah, I think she should run well.
Well, what's your record on with how many flat starts have you had?
You know, I don't. It's hard for me since I've taken over. Not many. Obviously, you know, we had a really good year last year when I was still under Jonathan. I think we had like a 26% win percentage on the flat last year, but that wasn't under my name, so people don't really look at me like that yet. So hopefully we can change that. So she'd be my first flat winner in my name anyway if she wins.
Nice. Well, you know, it's funny. Something just caught my eye actually about this horse. In terms of the acquisition,
mm-hmm.
All right, it was a Timonium 2-year old, but Wynn Oaks, the breeder,
yeah,
they've gone repeatedly to Wigelia with this
yeah.
Crypto Star mare, and
yeah.
All the siblings have at least won once.
Yeah.
So she comes from a winning family.
Yeah, she comes from a very good family. P.J. Arnold Bloodstock actually found her for me. She was at the end of the sale, and, to be fair to her, she has a really nice page to her. They're all winners. All her siblings are winners, and she's done nothing wrong in the morning. She has a couple really nice works, so fingers crossed.
Well, and the mayor's got an interesting name. Do what your
do
big sis little, did.
Yeah,
do,
yeah.
Right? And
yep.
the big sister being Lexi Star.
Yes. Yep.
A 12-time, that was a Maryland, big Maryland bred, right?
Maryland, yeah.
Crypto
Star. She has a good page on her.
Big time.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Well, so now these are the two horses to talk about with Kerry beyond the jumpers. And in addition to Pormier Rose later today at Presque Isle, also you're coming back with Swim at Penn National on the 31st.
Yeah, so it's Swim in there. I also have him entered. There's hurdle racing at Colonial Downs on Monday as well. And I have him entered there as well, and I haven't quite decided what I'm doing yet. He'll either be in the maiden hurdle. If they split the maiden hurdle at Colonial, he'll be probably go there. If not, he'll go to Penn. He's a very, very well-bred horse, and I actually rode his mother for Jonathan and got him through a sale. He's just a late bloomer being an English Channel, but. He's quite a nice horse, and like I said, kind of came full circle. He's Augustin bred. Mr. Shawbridge bred him, and like I said, Nishindi, his mother, I used to gallop her for Jonathan. So feeling a bit old.
I love it. That's how you know you're maturing in the industry when you start
when you're training the pair, sons and daughters of horses you gallop.
Exactly. Well, and this, you know, you mentioned the family. Goes back not only Nishindi but Nishinda. Mac Benson trained was a very nice stakes mare.
Yes, yeah, and he's just, you know, he's immature, and he's, English Channels take a while to come around anyway, so it's just taking him a bit to kind of it all come around, but he's a very good jumper, and he's putting it together, and I think he can have a career on the flat as well as over jump, so we're just taking our time with him. He's owned by really good people, and they're happy to take their time.
Well, Kerry, at what point? I guess not until Thanksgiving. That'll be when you catch your breath and sort of blink your eyes and say, "Oh my God!"
I know.
What a year!
I know, it's unreal. I mean, they put the statistics out for, you know, as of right now, for the summer. After the summer's not done yet, but as of right now, where everyone stands in the NSA, and like I'm tied with Jack Fisher for wins and. My owners are leading money earners. I'm leading money earner as a trainer, and Baltimore Bucko is the leading horse currently. So it's pretty cool to see that. I mean, it probably won't stay through the end of the year, but just to see that stage is pretty darn cool.
Are you, Leslie Knopf asks a relevant question. Are you going to winter in Ireland again?
And that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I'm trying not to get too excited. You know, there's obviously we have Cheltenham in the back of our minds for the Mean Queen. If we think she's good enough, and, you know, we kind of plan our campaign after Belmont, decide what we want to do. But nothing's set in stone yet. I don't think I'll winter the way I did last year, but I definitely think there's a possibility of taking her and maybe another one over and training them in Ireland for a little bit and getting one run and going to Cheltenham. But we will see.
Oof, that would be unbelievable. All right, we're going to keep monitoring, and there's still plenty more chapters to write. We've got easily two more months and some big races with Snap Decision and the Mean Queen on a collision course for the Lonesome Glory, and that'll be worth getting to Belmont for in September, big time.
Definitely.
I love it. Kerry, well done, and we'll see you soon. We'll talk again, undoubtedly.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Kerry Brion, everybody, and you can follow Kerry at Twitter, Kerry145. Kerry145, and keep tabs because... I mean, just it's been magical. I mean, everything she's sending out and going great. Seth Merrow is magical, and it looks like he's going to be a finalist for America's most popular television pundit in racing.
Crazy, right? Who could have seen that coming?
Anybody that has ever laid eyes on you, they were waiting for this opportunity, Seth. For years, people have been saying, "I want to be able to vote for Seth Merrow as most popular favorite television personality."
And we'll have to wait till November to see if I made the finalist. But the way the voting closed out, I think I'm right there. So it's going to be fun to see. But it was fun over the track. You know, we were having fun with it and pushing it on Twitter and on TV, and it was fun to track the last few days of voting over the weekend. People are walking by me and give me a thumbs up. Hey, I voted for you. Hey, I voted for you. So thanks to all the voters. Thanks to all the voters.
Well, and you know, Seth is virtually. He's like Captain Kangaroo, you know. He's kind of just kind of cuddly. That's a great analogy. The Captain Kangaroo of racing punditry.
Since you sit in with me, but does that make you Mr. Green Jeans?
Mr. Green Jeans, that's me. I'm more like Mr. Moose. Right? Wasn't he the wisecracking annoyance, Mr. Moose?
I believe so. I believe I'll have to walk in every morning, and the theme music will end when I put my keys down.
Oh, that's great. All right. How was the draw? What insights can you provide from the Travers draw?
Well, Al Stahl was interesting, too, because he got up and commented, Masquerade, he says, is working lights out as best as he's seen him working. So that was a little bit interesting. Drew the six-post position, 6-7. King Fury's on the outside. Talked with Kenny McPeak. He's looking forward to his. He thinks the 15-1 on his horse is a little bit long, given his performance two back in the Ohio Derby against some of the others in here. Talked to Robertino Diodoro. Keep me in mind. He's looking forward to that one off the nice second in the Jim Dandy. And he, you know, that's about the distance, obviously, which you have to ask with a race like this. And he said, you know, one of those horses, the longer the better. But David Aragona made Essential Quality the 4-5 favorite. Did get the two hole, but I mean, he does look like, you know, he's clearly the leader at this point in the division, and it's going to take a little step up from some of these other horses to get by him. You know, but it was a close finish in the Jim Dandy last time, so you can certainly make that argument. The distance is not as much of a question mark for him, obviously, but it's always a question mark for some of the other ones who may really like it. So we'll see. Field of seven going, and I think it's going to be a fun fun afternoon highlighted by the Travers, which has the potential to crown a champion, because clearly if Essential Quality wins the Travers, I would be very tough to unseat them at that point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I, you know, at first, I wondered if 4-5 was a little aggressive. That's a good proposition in and of itself. Do we think that Essential Quality, when the gates open, final odds, does he go odds on, or is he even money? I have to admit
when they announced the 4-5, I was with you. I thought that was a little short. To me, 6-5 is maybe a little more in the ballpark, but he does have the edge, though.
Because I'm just, the question is, and Sid and I sort of bounced off each other for, you know, for 10 minutes, kind of looking at the field and peeking under the hood of some of these. And it is hard. David may have this right, and I'll tell you why. There isn't necessarily anybody here that's going to catch a wave. I suppose Mass Parade draws a little bit. Midnight Bourbon has his fans. I think it's hard to envision somebody, you know, being driven down, you know, and being the now horse that draws a lot of money that essentially pulls Essential Quality up. So yeah, he might be right here.
Yeah, you make a good point in that there is no wise guy horse in here. There's nobody you're looking at thinking, oh, people are jumping on him based on workouts or whatever. And Essential Quality comes in with a gaudy 7-8 record that just kind of jumps off the page. So he's clearly going to be the favorite. Now, I wasn't arguing much. I was saying 6-5 versus 4-5, but we'll see. We'll see where the betting public goes.
Well, we got about 10 minutes, and we can use that productively. I have just pulled up the scratches to today's action, and I wouldn't mind walking through a little bit, Seth, and bouncing some opinions. I ended up making the, I don't know if you were around, you weren't on today, right? It was Anthony.
No,
and
I was running around.
Yeah.
So, Brian, yeah.
And Brian, I never saw them on screen because I was doing. You know, we did it live here.
Are you out in Vegas already?
I've been in Vegas. Wait, already? Wait. Yes.
You were leaving on Tuesday, but
no,
so just double checking.
No. Well, no, I was in San Diego. You recall?
Wow, I know. I know that. We talked to you via Zoom on Sunday.
All right.
Yes, I knew that.
And you talked to me from Zoom.
I hadn't mysteriously gone senile in the last 3 days.
Well, you were so busy busking for votes, I didn't know if, you know.
Jesus. It wore me out. What was that old Spencer Tracy movie? King, I was playing that wrong. I was working the room.
Exactly. So, we moved over on Monday afternoon. Had a wonderful, nice Mexican lunch with Jay Privman and his wife, Anne. A lovely time. And then we headed to the airport. So we've been established here in Vegas.
Is today the last chance?
Tomorrow.
Is that tomorrow? Okay. All right.
All right. And then we start on Friday. So here we go. Let's look at this. And I'm pulling up the. I tell you, I'm glad I didn't put my pick five ticket up, because I've been absolutely hit with some scratches in the 6th, 7th, and in the 10th. So I've got to do some work after we get off the air. What do you like in the front half of the card before we talk the pick five?
I don't know whether I had anything clever. I mean, I really haven't had a chance to sit down, and usually before you call me, I'll look and see if I have something. Well, Lee's horse, it's 5-2, but I'm going to be interested to see what No Burn can do for Lee and Phil Mott, because they take a kind of a steep drop. But they only paid $14,000 for the horse, so off the speed shown it a little bit better. I thought that horse in the opener, No Burn, as I say, not much of a price there. It's 6-1, Casals up in the second race, I think, is a player. But I learned a few years ago, this is going back a ways, Wayne Lucas early in the meet was just didn't have a winner. And it went for a long time, and I just kept playing his horses and playing his horses. And eventually these trainers will break through, but he got towards the end of the meet. And so trainers that are a little cold, and now that we're this far into the meet, Peter Walder, limited starters, but hasn't really broken through yet. But boy, Casalsa certainly looks like has the potential with Lee Saez on board, and they're 6-1 in the second race. So there are a couple of early ideas.
All right, let's turn to the 5th and that turf sprint for the 3 and ups. And this is a really interesting race, Seth. You've got at least four horses here. Digital Future, Kiwamiya River, Cool Quest, and First Law. These are horses that it's hard to believe. I mean, they're going to all break their maiden eventually, but only one today. And then there's also Partner's Hope for Linda Rice. What did you do in the 5th?
I went with Chad and Klarovich off the two near miss efforts. They don't necessarily inspire confidence because they kind of signal this horse may be stuck in a bridesmaid situation, but still likely raced enough and gets a blinker change that I think will be beneficial. So, but I thought Cool Quest for Brian Lynch tries to turf. Nice little workout leading into this. I thought that horse might be a little bit interesting in here too. I had it 1-8-9-3.
I think it's too early. I mean, it's too early to, you know, declare, you know, lightly raced types.
About it, but there are two second place men. Yeah, it's only three starts and only two on the turf. No question.
And yeah, Cool Quest. Cool Quest has got there's pedigree there from Val Marie. In fact, Val Marie, there's a sibling of Cool Quest. That was very good. I'm not going to forget who it is. In fact, I think a turf stake horse. First Law as well is far from hopeless for Jerry O'Dwyer. I mean, all four of them to me have a fairly equal chance. I only ended up putting Kiwamiya River on top because it's the second start, and second start is invariably has the potential to be the, you know, the most significant start for a horse, and significant improvement can frequently be expected. In the 6th race, Seth, I was kind of excited to include Couper for Barkley Tag, the firster, but that Cupid filly has been scratched, and you can take out the 12 and the 13 as well. Recaptivating, or are captivating, gets in the 11, but this was kind of a murky group of state-bred two-year-old fillies.
Yeah, I went with Waterville because I like that one in the first start. I got 11-1 there. Yeah, I'm not sure what we'll get. It's 3-1 on the morning line, but you know, had trouble. Sibling Strong to gold, won two of the first three. Sibling Seafoam, some horses, both horses I think have run at the meet. 3 seconds to start the career, followed by a couple wins. So I thought there was win early. Comont's very good, win early. Gap Leon having a good meet. So I'm going to give this one a little bit of a pass on the first start, put that one on top. Oak Loves a Fight, I thought was decent in the debut. Yep. Builds on that one. And you just can't ignore Luis Saez at the meet. So also, there was a sibling called Dighton that was second, then a fifth, a third, and a win. But the 3 seconds early on, say there's a little bit of kind of win early type of talent there. So I put False Hope in the mix as well. 8-6-4-2.
Yeah, I agree with most of the rationale. Same way, Waterville. Waterville Lake isn't going to name a horse Waterville unless they think there's that she's got some talent. And I liked her first time too. Oak Loves a Fight, very decent. And I was going to use those two firsters, What Love Looks Like and Compare. Now I've got to find a different fourth horse with Compare coming out. The seventh race is a state bred, an interesting condition, state bred 25 claimer, and you've got significant droppers happening in here, most notably Gandy Dancing. I was surprised to see 9-2 on this horse from Chad, dropping down for 25,000 out of State Bred Allowance Company, and is actually going turf to dirt. If 9-2 holds, he's value. I used him and prominently, as well as Bruce Levine. I would love to see Bruce get off the duck with Just Right.
And speaking of New York trainers, that Phil Serpy went and
that was great. Had him on today.
Queen's Plate. Oh, that was crazy. That was great. The mistake I made, maybe leaving Gandy Dancing out. I went 7-4-5-8. I went back and forth on Gandy Dancing. Left that one out, but I love the class move. Might have been a mistake there, but I put Just Right. I put the Bruce Levine horse on top, off the claim, in good form. Just missed Jose Ortiz Sticks 4-1 on the morning line. I played around with that one. Power Up Painter, I think, in the third start of the season, up a couple of improving
scratched
numbers.
That's
in the
a scratch.
First two starts with a little
scratched
class move.
Scratched.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Yeah, I have the scratches up, but I didn't catch that. So we'll take that one out. Then Binkster in the now in the second spot for me. Dark Money, again, Luis Saez on board. There's some back numbers, and just Saez seems to be moving horses up, so I wouldn't ignore that one either. So now for me, it's 7-5-8, and now we'll pull the 2-1 down at the bottom of the mix.
There you go. The eighth race, starter allowance, and mile and an eighth on the main track. Winter Pool, weigh the horse to beat for Chad. However, Top Gun Tommy, Hambrazo, and Tis Rye Time all are within striking distance, and that Top Gun Tommy is progressive, is moving forward. 5-7-4-2 for me in the eighth.
Yeah, I'm right in the same ballpark. 5-4-7-8 for me. Again, I think Winter Pool does have the edge, but it's not much of an edge on Hambrazo. So wouldn't leave that one off if I was doing the horizontal. Well, Top Gun Tommy off the last race, it was a money track, but that one, you can make the argument for it as well, off the latest. But more consistently to me is Hambrazo. So 5-4-7-8.
The stake is really competitive, and I made the case on TV, Seth, and actually on my write-up. Rise the Guy with Saez has got performances that show some speed, and there's no speed in this at all. And so even a horse, even some of the horses that look good on paper, like a Journey to Freedom and Shamrocket, they're not going to have any pace to close into. And Saez, if he gets the front end on Rise the Guy 6-1, I think he'll be tough to reel in.
Yeah, and I got a nephew named Ryan, so Rise the Guy. I did the hunch bet last time, and he ran fourth, didn't help me out, ran fifth, didn't help me out there at 14-1. But I'm wondering, getting back to the turf, I didn't use him, but I'm not arguing against it at all. As you say, with the move back to the turf, in that early speed, and Saez on board. But I went 3-1-4-8. I thought Shamrock did up the graded stakes, third place finish last time up here in the Bowling Green, looked pretty good. Rosario on board. Red Knight, I think, is a player in here. Hasn't gotten it done this year, but I think it's going to fit okay with this bunch at 5-1, and a Journey to Freedom coming off a win on the move up to Saratoga last time. You know, class-wise moves up a little bit, but I think in the current form it's playable. So for me, 3-1-4-8.
We've got about a minute and a half or so, and the last is now, I don't know if I'm not going to say I scratched in, but my original top pick was Come Storming, but I was really intrigued by John Stevens showing up from Monmouth with Seeking Revenge, and I made the 4 at 20-1, the DePaula play of the day. I don't know if this horse can win, but it was here last year for the same kind of race, is in the same kind of form, was third a year ago, and I think in this group, non-winners of three types, very possible at 20-1, My Candy Girl, the 11, the horse to beat.
Yeah, I put that one on top, but underneath that, Jazzy Lady, it's Mike Maker off the claim, Jose Ortiz, Come Storming, as you say, scratched, and at that point, I move up. Unicorn Sally, I love state-bred allowance to open claimers, open conditional claimers even better. So on the class move, Luis Saez on board, 12-1 on the morning line. I'm going to play around with Unicorn Sally, but now with that one a little bit of a price, I'm going to throw your number 4 in the mix as well, because you've been doing so well with the DePaula play of the day for Capital TV. So I'll have it 11-5-1-4.
America's most popular television pundit personality, Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter. He's number 2 on Twitter, but he's number 1 in your heart.
Oh, I'm putting that on my business card.
But Seth Merrow, everybody, what a fun morning, making up for yesterday's absolute disaster. Kerry Brion as well, Phil Serpy and Sid and Pete and cast of thousands. I'll have the plays up shortly at the website. Good luck, everybody. Back with you tomorrow, 9 o'clock here for the last chance, next chance contest, and much, much more from Las Vegas. At the races. Sirius XM. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup. And no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.